And the captain joins us now. Luke, congratulations. Like your buddy Michael Jordan back in the day, you're going for the three-peat. How quickly did this come together after Bethpage Black?
To be honest, Damon, it took a while to get to this decision. I think after Rome and having the opportunity to go to New York and do one home and away, that didn't take me very long to decide. You know, within a few weeks, I was meeting with the guys at the European tour and seeing if that was a possibility. And I really wanted to get stuck into, you know, trying to do that, to win one home and away. And once that was accomplished, that Sunday night when we were celebrating after a very stressful day on the Sunday during the singles, you know, I wanted to enjoy this one. And to be honest, it hasn't been really until the last 3 or 4 weeks that I've really, really seriously considered it and, you know, talked to my family and talked to the specific people involved that I had an interest. So, yeah, I'm obviously glad and an amazing privilege to be able to do it again and to obviously have the support of the tour and the players and of course, my family means a great deal.
You had the perfect storybook ending in New York. If you wanted to ride off into the sunset, how tempting was that to just say, I had my two, I ended on the perfect note in New York?
Yeah, it was, George. You know, again, that was sort of always my goal when I had the opportunity to go in New York was to win one home and away. And you know, I really wasn't thinking about a third. But, you know, these opportunities don't come around very often. And I'm a big believer in taking them. And but I did want to have some time to enjoy this one a little bit. You know, as I said, you know, I think those are way Ryder Cups. It was obviously a tricky environment. Yeah, it takes a lot out of you, and it took a lot out of the players. And I wanted to sort of decompress and really enjoy this. But you know, I think in the last few weeks, you know, obviously I understand the opportunity ahead and to be able to captain again for a third time in Ireland, which is, you know, a special place for the 100th anniversary. I think it's going to be quite a Ryder Cup.
Yeah, you mentioned the honor and the commitment that it is, and you talked about speaking to your family. This is going to involve them as well, interruptions to their schedule. It's such a big deal being a Ryder Cup captain. What were those conversations like with Diane and the kids?
Yeah, to be honest, you know, the Ryder Cup has been so impactful to me, but also to my family. You know, obviously it's great to have enjoyed two successful captaincies, but you know, I think just you know, as a father, they get to see what I've been doing. You know, I think when I was at my prime as a player, you know, they were so young, they didn't really understand, you know, the victories, the highs and the lows. But you know, I think through the last 3 or 4 years as in this role, they've kind of seen the work that goes into it, the preparation, and that, you know, if you are prepared, good things can happen. And you know, I think that's been great. Obviously, the 2 weeks in Rome and in New York, just having lots of other family around and experience that, you know, one of the best sporting events in the world and seeing their dad kind of at the helm has really been something very impactful for them. So they were all into me doing it again. You know, it was me that was sort of taking the time to decide whether I wanted to push forward or not.
Which voice or voices were the most influential in you deciding to take the captaincy a third time?
I think my wife, Diane, you know, she plays a pivotal role too, you know, as lady captain, especially for a home Ryder Cup. She has a lot of more decisions and more planning to make. And she tries to make everything enjoyable for the week for both teams and all the families. And you know, she loved what she got to do in Rome, and she was very excited to try and do that again in Ireland. I think Adair Manor is going to be an incredible place. JP McManus, the owner, loves golf. He's made a huge impact in giving back to the local community, and to obviously have that and be the 100th anniversary. I think she is really looking forward to it, and so am I.
Luke, you know that every Ryder Cup is different, but I'm curious from your perspective, how critical is continuity and consistency of voice in success in the Ryder Cup?
I think we were extremely fortunate to obviously have a team that was so similar to Rome, you know, 11 out of the 12. That never happened before. I think continuity helps. They understood you sort of myself, how I work, and I understood them very well. Now, saying that, obviously, I expect that there'll be some new blood, new players coming, you know, to try and make that team for this this time around in Ireland. So, you know, that doesn't happen very often, but I still expect there to be, you know, plenty of the guys that played for me last year to be making this team. They'll certainly be eager to do that, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was some new players coming along too.
Luke, we see coaches in other sports. Some are tacticians when it comes to leading up to an event. Others are in-game strategists. You've lived this now twice. What percentage of Team Europe's success do you attribute to everything you do leading up to the week of a Ryder Cup versus the moves you make during the week of a Ryder Cup?
I'd say predominantly, you know, what we do before it has the most impact. Talking to the players, gaining their trust, coming up with, you know, ideas that will really motivate them. You know, my job is to create the culture to get them to perform at a high level. So to keep them engaged in the purpose of why we're doing it and the reasons why I think they can win. And I think that a lot of that happens before the week. But, you know, obviously, I can't do this alone. We have a great backroom team. I have great vice captains. So many people helping along the way. And, you know, obviously I get the plaudits when we win, but there's so many people in the background that makes such a difference. And a lot of that work is done, you know, before the week.
On that note, you're a year and a half out. What is the priority early March? You know, how do you start putting the pieces together already? What are you doing? What are you working on?
Yeah, I think a little bit about, you know, who that backroom team would be, who my vice captains would be. Obviously, I have a little bit of an idea. It was very similar from Marco Simone to Beth Page. But also to take a visit to Adair, to start looking at the golf course, to see what we can do, to look at the team spaces, start kind of formulating a plan for, you know, how we can get these guys motivated. You know, what is the cause? Why are we playing? And that changes, you know, that changes every year and changes every Ryder Cup. So it's different golf course, different players, different strategies. It'll be fun. And then obviously I look at the qualification system criteria coming up soon. You know, it's important to get that right to make sure, you know, whether it's six picks, four picks, whatever it might be, and getting those automatic qualifiers correctly where we feel like we have the strongest 12 guys going to Adair.
Luke, you're part of one of the ultimate sliding doors moments that we've seen in Ryder Cup. You weren't the original pick in 2023 with Henrik Stenson's decision to go to LIV. You then get the captaincy, and the rest has been history these last two Ryder Cups. When you look back to reflect, what comes to mind?
Yeah, just I think, you know, in life, sometimes you get these opportunities and it's how you take advantage of them. Obviously, the captaincy came to me in an unusual way and obviously glad it did. And I've taken full advantage of that. And it's been an amazing blessing to me and my family. It's given me, a great focus, you know, something to really get behind an area in a professional golfer's life that's, you know, can be challenging. Those years in your 40s leading up to Champions Tour, you know, it can be a little bit of a dead zone. You know, it's hard to compete against these young guys. And to obviously have this focus of being a Ryder Cup captain for the last 4 years and going on another 18 months now has been very, very special.
Luke, speaking of LIV Golf, one of the cogs of your engine, John Rahm, spoke very, very openly about how he believes he's being extorted by the DP World Tour to play 6 versus 4 events. Are you concerned at all about the potential fallout of his statement and whether or not he's going to be a part of that team next year in Ireland?
Yeah, thankfully, we have a lot of time, you know, and obviously my plan would be to get on the phone with John at some point and chat with him. I have a good relationship. He's been an amazing player for us and for me, an amazing teammate. And obviously, I'd love for him to be available for that team. you know, obviously, you know, we have some time, and hopefully things can get figured out. Because yeah, as I said, I'd love for him to be available.
Luke, Tony Jacklin, the standard in the 80s, Ryder Cup captain for Team Europe, winning in 85, 87, retaining the cup in 89. You have a chance to win three consecutive Ryder Cups and make some history. When it comes to legacy, how important is that to you?
I mean, history is important. Legacy, I feel like, is a label given to you by others. You know, I think... my goal, especially for the first one, was to create an environment that the players could succeed, and I would build lasting relationships. You know, and I think, you know, my job is obviously to put them in a great position, but it's also to think about the future and to put in place, you know, certain things that will give Europe maybe an edge, you know, going down the future. So I think that's really my legacy, is just leaving the captaincy in a better place than I found it, and coming up with new ways to that will be, you know, hopefully used for years to come, that will give future captains a better opportunity. But yeah, I'm not really, you know, thinking ahead to Sunday of Adair. You know, that's, you cannot never control the result. It's about, you know, going through the day-to-day processes of figuring out how you can put together a good plan for these guys to do what they do best.
With a fleet of Ryder Cup trophies behind him and a replica of the Coliseum, Luke Donald is captain once again. Congratulations, Luke. We'll speak to you soon.
Congrats, yeah, Luke.
The Ryder Cup has good meaning to me, for sure, as you can see behind me. So thanks, guys.
Now let's welcome in the next generation. John, you've been going to PGA Tour events, including this one, since you were a little kid with your dad. When did you start dreaming of playing out on tour?
Probably when I was little, honestly. I started swinging the club when I was two, just watching my dad grow up, or just growing up watching my dad plays. I think that's what kind of did it for me. I knew at a young age I was probably going to end up playing golf. But yeah, this was one of my favorite events to come to and watch as a kid and be a part of. And now this being my first start is pretty special.
Well, your dad's a busy guy making movies with Adam Sandler and whatnot. But what's the best piece of advice he's given you so far ahead of this week?
Just to have fun. I mean, it's just treat like another tournament. There's a lot of cameras, but it is what it is. Just go out there and have fun and enjoy it.
College golf fans are familiar with your game, but for those who haven't seen it before, how would you compare it to your dad?
Right now I'm like about 40 yards past him, but I'm also 22. But I think he was a little past me when he was my age. But no, I mean, I've learned everything about the game from him, and he's just excited for me to be playing here this week.
How'd your swing develop, by the way? Because your swing is different from your dad. Your dad way past parallel off the tee. Your backswing a little shorter, at least from my eye. How would you describe your move and kind of how it developed?
Probably just from the academy in high school. He didn't really teach me to take it back all the way here, but just the coaches at the academy were helping me out a lot, and that's just kind of where I got it from.
How big an influence not only has he been on your game, but now as a pro, does he want you to chart your own course, or is he going to be a sounding board day to day? What's his approach as comes to being a dad now?
I mean, he just wants me to have fun. He just wants me to do what I love doing. And if that's golf, great. If it's anything else, he doesn't mind. But he doesn't really pressure it on me. He doesn't, like, force anything on me, which is cool. But, no, he just wants me to have fun and just be myself.
Well, we know golfers are all different levels of crazy. I read where you have some sort of superstition with three tees in your
three
pocket.
Tees.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me that story. How'd that come about?
I think they're actually right here somewhere.
Like, why three?
I got my three T's. I don't know. It's just something I started doing, like junior events, and every good round I'd play, I'd be like, okay, it's because I had three T's. The bad rounds were because I didn't have three T's. But no, it's just something, I don't know, it's something I've always had. And then I've been using the same ball marker probably since all of college, my freshman year.
You get the chance to prove it against the pros out in the PGA Tour, but there are a lot of young names that are in the field this week, and the event has done a great job of curating a lot of the talent that we may see at the next level very soon. Blades Brown, Miles Russell, just to name a couple of the guys who are in the mix, including yourself. What's the motivation like, not only to have some trash-talking friendly among your peers that you're seeing in college, but also guys that you're now going to see on the PGA Tour this week?
Yeah, no, I know Miles and Blades and them pretty well. I know a lot of other guys in the field. I grew up a lot playing with Luke Clanton, a lot of junior events with him, Gordon, all these guys. Michael Brennan, we used to play a lot together, so it's pretty cool seeing some familiar faces, and I look forward to it. It's going to be fun.
A lot of golf viewers first saw you at the PNC, which you've actually won before with your dad and had a couple of runner-up finishes as well. How impactful has that event in Orlando been on your golf life?
I think the most thing I can take from that is just getting used to, like, the cameras being on me at a young age. Ever since I was 13, we've been playing that tournament, so I've kind of gotten over the, like, cameras on me nerves, I guess. So that's been pretty cool to get that from that. But, no, it's just that tournament's awesome. And my summer, I had a really good summer this year, and I got a lot of confidence.
We always hear about ticket requests guys may deal with when they're getting their first start on the PGA Tour. Are you getting your dad a ticket this week, or is he going to be watching on Golf Channel like the rest of us?
I think he's going to be watching at home. He couldn't make the trip this week. He's been busy, but he can't wait to watch. He's excited.
How about your senior year of college? You know, how are things going? What are you most looking forward to as we thaw out of winter and look forward to spring?
Yeah, I mean, we got a great squad this year. I think we just went to fifth in the rankings, I saw, which is awesome. I'm just looking forward to my last semester. God, it's crazy to say last semester. Wow. Went by fast. But, no, just excited to see what we can do with this team and hope to bring home a natty.
Hey, time flies. Enjoy being a Big Bad Senior with that last semester on campus. And final question, if we're talking to you a week from now, and for you to say the Puerto Rico Open was a success, what needs to happen this week?
Just have fun and, I don't know, win, I guess. I mean, that'd be awesome, right? Everyone's playing to win. But I just want to make the cut and just see how – and just get used to it. Just see how it is, learn, and just try to build some momentum.
Hey, we saw Michael Brennan win the Bank of Utah Championship last year as a sponsor's invite, so it could certainly happen, and we're going to enjoy watching you this week. Thanks for the time on Golf Today.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys.
Let's get to know the man a bit better. The pride of Chico State, three-time All-American during his college days, played in the Arnold Palmer Cup 10 years ago, representing the U.S., has had five PGA Tour starts. If you remember, back in 2024 when Chris Goddard won, Alistair Daugherty was the runner-up, was T2 that week at the Myrtle Beach Classic. Got his first Korn Ferry Tour win, as mentioned, to qualify for the 2026 Open. And now we get to chat with the man on Golf Today. Alistair, you've had a lot happen in your life over the past couple years. So what did that win down in Argentina mean to you?
It meant everything. I mean, it meant the hard work it paid off. It was a long time coming, really.
You had tears afterwards. You were incredibly emotional. Why did it impact you in such a strong way?
I still have tears. I keep watching the video, and I'm an emotional guy. It was a crazy run. There was a lot of very close calls, a lot of tough times. And being open and honest, I went to a pretty dark place for a few months, and it stung. So the last few months, I've been working with a sports psychologist and a therapist, and been really working hard mentally to dig myself out of that hole. And not every day is easy, but I executed my mental stuff last week to the best of my abilities, and to come out on top was amazing.
And you've had such a beautiful start to the year, runner-up finish and the win here. You talk about the darkness and now seeing the light. Was this what occurred last year, a couple of years ago? What was the timeline where you've had to go through this period?
A little bit of both. But the close calls in 2024 hurt pretty bad, but I don't like talking about it too much, but after that car crash, it was a very, very dark place. There was never really a day that went by that I said, the time is turning, and other than when I qualified for the Open, the U.S. Open last year. But even then, I was very injured and played through those injuries, which might have put me further back in the recovery process. So it was a very dark time since then.
How has sports psychology benefited you through these dark patches in your life?
Being able to talk to somebody and be open and letting somebody else in and really understand what's going on in your brain is a scary thing to do. But I can probably say I wouldn't be here if I didn't do it.
Wow, really impactful. And obviously you've seen the benefit from that experience. As you look back on your junior golf career and all the stops that you've had along the way, is there someone or a group of people who have been the most impactful for you to get to this point now as a winner on the Korn Ferry Tour?
I mean, there's so many people that I could thank. And I mean, the first people that come to mind is my family. My mom, dad, and my sister have been there through everything. And they've never given up on me. And that means the most.
Alistair, in what ways can you reframe your journey using the difficulty to say, you know what, I have armor now. I have proven that I'm even maybe tougher than I even knew.
That's one way to put it for sure. I really don't know. I'll be able to go back on this moment and this last week and know that as long as I keep putting the work in, anything is really possible.
The Korn Ferry Tour takes you all over the place. You just won in Argentina. You're now in Santiago, Chile. It's not like you've had time to really unwind back home with friends and family. What's this ride like through this part of the schedule, and especially considering the success you've had early in the year?
It's tough. Traveling this far and being this far away from home and my family and friends, and it's been difficult, but you know, we're gonna tee it up tomorrow and go through the process and make sure that we're, you know, trying to put ourselves in position to do something again. And then once we get back to the States, I'll have some, you know, good dinners with the close friends and sponsors, and then we'll get ready for the next stretch of tournaments.
Well, I know you're looking forward to celebrating with family and friends, and it can't be easy to talk about some of the dark moments in your life. We appreciate your candor, and congratulations on all you have to look forward to.
Best of luck.
Thank you guys so much.
We got Golf Channel analyst Steve Marino stopping by the show. Steve, you are a dual threat this week, having had runners-up finishes at both Arnold Palmer Invitational and the Puerto Rico Open. Let's start with Bay Hill. How would you describe the personality of that course and that whole property?
That place is awesome. It's a totally different animal. Like, if you go play it in the summer, compared to what it is now with the overseed thick rough, it is a tough beast. You know, the Florida swing starting in Bay Hill, it's a tough test of golf, and guys are going to have their hands full this week for sure.
I believe this is the toughest two-week stretch on the PGA Tour calendar. I've said it in print. I'm saying it in television, linear, Bay Hill and the Players. Am I crazy? Am I close? Am I correct? What say you?
You're definitely not crazy. off the top of my head, I can't really think of any other two courses back-to-back that is really going to grab your attention like those two courses. Bay Hill, it tests every part of your game. You got to be accurate off the tee, accurate with your irons and your short game. And you know, there's a lot of trouble you could find out there, a lot of water, a lot of bogeys and doubles to be had at Bay Hill.
You gave some of the shots in the bag that you need at Bay Hill. Is there a certain type of golfer DNA that you look for to be able to contend and possibly slip on the cardigan at the end of the week?
Yeah, I think it's somebody with a real sound all-around game, good driver of the ball, golf ball. You can't be coming into those greens out of the rough out there. You're going to have a hard time hitting them, let alone getting it close to the hole. And kind of a guy that's a little bit of a grinder with some grit, because it's going to test you mentally out there. So you need to be real strong in your head to get it done at Bay Hill.
when you contended in 2011, I want to say Laird finished at 8 under, you finished at 7 under. What do you remember just about how grueling, especially that final round Sunday, was for both of you?
Well, the main thing I remember is making double on 17 on Sunday. I plugged it in the bunker short, and it was kind of funny. In the practice round earlier in the week, I was playing with Spencer Levine, and I plugged one in that bunker on Tuesday. And I didn't know how to hit a plugged bunker shot at that point. I couldn't get it out. I was asking everybody in the group for advice. And then sure enough, come Sunday, the same thing happens. And I got it out, but I went over the green and didn't get it up and down and made double, came back and birdied 18. But I remember that. I thought I had the tournament in my hands. And then, you know, lo and behold, the same thing happened on Sunday. So I was not, you know, able to overcome that that plugged bunker.
Close call there. And then 5 years later, the playoff in Puerto Rico with Tony Finau. Of the two, which do you look back? Or maybe it's both, and you're like, man, I kind of had one hand right there on the trophy.
Yeah, that was a crazy playoff that Tony and I had. I think it was the first playoff hole. I hit it in this bunker like 40 yards short left of the green, and I don't even know if anybody in the field had been in the entire week. I found myself in there and was able to somehow get that up and down and extend the playoff, and I kind of felt like I had you know, I had control of it. I had a 30-footer for eagle and left it 4 feet short and missed that. And Tony ended up making birdie and defeating me.
Well, your tremendous recall is one of the reasons why your Golf Channel's newest Golf Central analyst. How are the early days going? Wearing an IFB, looking at scripts, you know, eating in the commissary. How's it going so far?
I'm having a great time. It's definitely something different. I felt nerves with the first couple shows that I've never felt before in my life. I was definitely more nervous doing that than, you know, playing in the final pairing of a PGA Tour event. It was pretty strange, but it felt good to get the juices flowing again. And now I'm really enjoying it and having a good time with it.
How differently are you watching golf now that you have an analyst hat?
100% differently. I'm more locked in. I'm keyed in. I'm paying attention to trends. I'm watching it definitely out of a little bit of a different lens. It was more of an entertainment type thing, but now I'm analyzing things. I'm noticing certain things that players do and don't do, and getting to know a lot more of the guys on tour than I did before.
Well, Steve, it's been fun to work with you so far, and look forward to seeing you in the hallways back at Golf Channel HQ sometime soon.
All right, I appreciate it, boys. Have a great one.